So in IBM, we've declared for the HR practitioner, analytics is one of the key strategic skills we expect all of you to have. So it's not just some of us, it's not just the analytics organization or 20, 30 people in the talent organization. It's everybody's expected to have these core analytics skills.
Hi, I'm David Green, and this is the final episode of Series 18 of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. You just heard Anshul Shiapuri, Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at IBM Workforce, talking about one of the key skills for HR professionals at IBM, data literacy. As both a business and technical executive at IBM working in HR, Anshul shares his views with us on both the strategic and technological future of HR, with a particular focus on the application of artificial intelligence across the field. Throughout this episode, Anshul and I discuss the five pillars of trustworthy AI in HR: transparency, explainability, fairness, robustness, and privacy, as well as examples of trustworthy AI in action. We look at the applications of AI in HR that Anshul is most excited about, including the multifaceted recommendation engine that connects IBMers to learning, mentors, job roles, and career opportunities, with skills data as the silver thread that holds it all together. We look at Anshul's top tips for HR and people analytics professionals to deploy AI ethically. And finally, developing a data-driven culture at IBM by 1, celebrating individuals who embody that culture; 2, investing in the right tools and technology to democratize data across the organization; and 3, making it clear which skills, including data literacy.
When I see AI projects failing, it's because they're not operating at the intersection of what is the business problem that you're trying to solve and the right user problem you're trying to solve. It's rarely because you don't have the right data or the data quality is poor. Those are all important ingredients, but it's mostly because you're not starting with the right business problem and user problem.
Today, I'm delighted to welcome Anshul Shiapuri, Vice President and Chief Technology Officer for IBM Workforce, to the Digital HR Leaders podcast. Anshul, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us. Can you provide listeners with a brief introduction to you and your role at IBM?
Sure, David. I'm so excited to be here with you. Thank you for having me. I have the pleasure and the privilege of leading our work around the digital platform for our IBM workforce. And what this really means is we all know data is a critical fodder for intelligent decision making. And it's all about high quality decisions for the IBMer, for the manager, for candidates as they apply for jobs at IBM, as well as irresistible experiences, consumer grade experiences that you have while you watch a movie online or hail a cab. That's the kind of experience we want to give you as a candidate or as an IBMer. Those two things together, the experience and the quality of the decision, is what my job is all about.
And I understand, I think your role encompasses a lot of areas. I think it encompasses people analytics, all the technology that you build and use for IBMers, and as you said, for those applying for IBM as well. Is that right?
That's right. So it is a broad role, which is what makes it so exciting. I'm also a IBM Distinguished Engineer, which, as your listeners might be interested to hearing, is a technical executive role at IBM. And it's a reflection of the times that we are in. Who would have thought a decade ago that somebody in HR, which would be a IBM Distinguished Engineer or a technical executive? And I have the privilege of having both a business executive role and a technical executive role. And that's what the new HR is. It's a digital AI-powered environment. And it's necessary because that's what our users are expecting and demanding.
Well, I know we're going to talk about a number of areas that are in your responsibility, Anshul. And I know from my own time at IBM, your experience in people analytics is vast. We're excited to talk to you today about a number of big themes, including AI and ethics, scaling analytics through productization, and enabling a data-driven culture. You know, let's start with AI and ethics. I think we have to start with ethics when it comes to AI. you know, as the number of organizations exploring or deploying AI continues to increase, you know, ensuring the ethical application of this technology is vital. Now, in your mind, what is trustworthy AI? I know you've written about it. That's why I'm asking the question, obviously.
Absolutely, David. And I'll start by the outset by saying this is an important area. It's also a nascent area. It's an area where we've been on a journey and been applying this very thoughtfully. But it's an area where many of you are also evolving your understanding. It's an area which I would say is all about ethical application of AI. And when you think about that, don't think about that as you've developed an AI and then at the back end of it, applied a checklist called ethics and closed the door on that. But it's something you do from the very beginning as you co-create with your users. And that's the approach we take, a proactive, systematic, scalable approach. All those three words are critical. Proactive, it's something you do upfront. Systematic, it's not something which you do ad hoc and reactive. It's something that's very programmatic that you do. And scalable, it's not something that you apply in one program or two. It's something you apply across all programs. And the way we approach this is through five core pillars that embody our trustworthy AI. The first is transparency. I mean, think about when you go and buy a beverage at your favorite coffee shop. You see the nutrition label. You see how many calories it has. What is that about AI? What is the health of the AI? You should be able to see it. You should be able to delve into it as a user, not just as a data scientist, but as a user of the AI. Explainability. Why is the AI giving a certain recommendation? When you watch a movie, you have some sense of the genre of the movies you like, what other viewers are watching, and why the AI is giving you a certain movie recommendation. The AI in HR should also give you that same sense of the why behind the what. The ultimate decision is yours, of course, but you should be able to understand the why behind the what. The third pillar is fairness. This is all about bias identification and mitigation. This is something you want to do upfront as part of the design of the AI. The fourth, robustness, having the right guidelines and operational principles. And the fifth, privacy. This is something we've all been practicing for a while, but becomes even more important in the area of increased regulation in the space. People who have the need to know should know it, and not others. So transparency, explainability, fairness, robustness, and privacy, the five pillars for trustworthy AI.
And I think what that helps set that up with that firm basis, as you said, you're thinking about that at the outset, not after you've designed an AI application that you want to use. It's that fair exchange in value. So if you think, I mean, all data is sensitive, you know, people data, whether it's customer data or employee data, but I think even more sensitive when it's employee data. And we're thinking about, I mean, the way you've described that there is that fair exchange in value. So in exchange for an employee providing access to their data to you and the team, they get something in return, and being very transparent about the data you're collecting, why you're collecting it, minimizing people who have got access to that data. And as you say, I don't know, if you're providing a recommendation around a career path within IBM, there's an explainability behind it as well. This is why we're recommending this for you as an IBMer, or this is why we're recommending for you as a manager, why you might want to take these steps to engage your team maybe better than you are at the moment.
That's really right, David. And what I would say for your viewers listening to this is we all have the right intent on this. We all want to do this. And I know many of you might feel, hey, how do I get started on this? I'm early on the journey. I would just say I get asked this question quite a lot. And many of you are in the same place. So don't feel like you're alone on the journey. Reach out to your peers. Reach out to your friends. And get started on this journey. It can be intimidating, but it's important. It's critical. It's where I strongly believe we all need to head towards.
With that, I mean, again, it's one of the things we recommend organizations do it inside to do. And I know you have this sort of thing in IBM. It's almost like put a charter in place, put an ethics charter in place on on how it's going to govern how you collect and use people data within the organization. And then, as you said, be transparent, make it available so people can see it. You know, I think this it's so important, you know, that we do this. You set that basis, and then by doing that, you create the trust, which is so important when it comes to using analytics and AI, particularly with people data.
Right. Absolutely right. And once you create this charter, it's not just keep the charter to yourself, but educate people on the charter. Be transparent. Have a conversation. You know, it's a journey we're all on, and the dialogue helps you evolve the charter into something that's much more effective for all of us.
I know, are you kindly with Diane, contributed a case study to excellence in people analytics, and we actually talked about some of the exciting ways you're using AI in HR at IBM. But not everyone who listens to this has read the book, and that's fine. So what are some of the most exciting applications that in your view of AI and HR?
Absolutely, David. And perhaps now they will read the book.
Well, you never know.
To me, the most exciting application of AI in HR is the evolution from point AI experiences, which are great, to connected AI experiences that are irresistible. And let me just delve into that a little more. When we started our AI journey in IBM, in HR, 5 to 6 years ago, it started with your learning, our personalized learning experiences for IBMers. It's great. It's got a lot of adoption. 98% of IBMers use it every quarter. It has a net promoter score above 60, which, if you're familiar with net promoter score, it's a pretty impressive number. But it's one pointed experience. It's personalized learning recommendations. Now, if you think about yourself, David, about you. How do you learn? And how do you achieve your career aspirations? You probably have some digital learning platform, but you have friends and peers that you talk to over coffee. You bump into them in the hallway, say perhaps at work. You have mentors that you reach out to every now and then for questions that you might have. So we all have our own personalized journeys that we're on, and these journeys cross siloed, functional experiences from learning. And to me, what we've done at IBM is connected personalized learning recommendations to mentor recommendations, to career recommendations, to the skills that you have as the underpinning of that, with skills as a silver thread, connecting all these pieces of the journey. And that connectedness, that connective tissue, is what I'm most proud of, because it really helps people achieve their aspirations. You may not know you have some of these, you know, the skills that could get you to this career. But now that you took this course, that you took this learning, you know, you got this badge, you may get a job recommendation that's now based on this and helps you achieve your career aspirations. So I always feel most humbled and, you know, I feel really good when I get an email from an IBMer who says, "Hey, I just want to let you know I got this job based on this job recommendation that I got. You know, I was going through this thought process. I never thought of myself in this role, but now I'm here." And that's just such a humbling experience to get that kind of note.
And as you said, I think that the skills is that silver thread that links all those otherwise siloed elements together. And I think that's the big, you know, which is a big difference, isn't it, from 3 to 4 years ago in any organization, really. And then I guess the benefit for the organization is exemplified as well, because it supports things like retention, mobility, workforce planning, all things that we're always asked about as HR professionals as well. But the technology helps enable all of this.
Absolutely. And David, you're very familiar with this more than anybody else. This is the single biggest shift that's occurred in HR, I would say, over the last decade. People would be asked how many people you have in a certain country, how much headcount you have. Now the question always is, in Munich, how many designers who are experts do we have? And is that fit for purpose for our business strategy or not? And that is why it's just not a HR problem to solve. We're solving this because that's what the business needs. And that is the case in pretty much any industry. I'm not just talking about tech, but gas or any other industry that you might consider. Digitization is forcing us to have a much more granular view of skills and embed that across the employee journey.
And, you know, is there any other examples that, well, I know you've got several, but any other examples you could share with us of trustworthy AI in action and the impact on the business at IBM?
Absolutely. And the one that I would want to share also is around pay. It's an area that is so important for all of us. And the importance of getting trustworthy AI right from the outset, not at the back end, but from a design standpoint up front, is so important. Today at IBM, we've pivoted from pay for performance to pay for skills. It's an important consideration of our silver thread, connected tissue, not just the way we hire, the way we grow, the way we learn, but the way we pay our employees. And that means if you're a manager today, you'll get recommendations of pay for each employee on your team. This is based on skills, competitiveness, performance, and potential. But it's so important, let me go back to the five pillars of trustworthy AI. Transparency. We want you as a manager, as an employee, to have clarity of all the data points under this. You can go to what we call AI fact sheets. This is your nutrition label of the AI and go and look at the factors that go into the AI and understand what's working, how is it working around that. So the transparency is so important. Explainability. Managers get reasons as to why they're getting these recommendations. It's just not a black box. Why is this being recommended? Because you may have some personal information which the AI may not be aware of the employee. The third is fairness, detecting and mitigating bias that may come in the pay recommendations is a third aspect of what we do in the context of our pay recommendation. Robustness, this is so important, David, and sometimes perhaps forgotten as this, people will take care of the process. But this is about putting in place the right operation control points, making sure that the right people have access to the right information, making sure that investments are going in the right places. And this is really about also changing the way work is done. It's an important point because when we did pay programs 5 years ago, the compensation professional was responsible for how many people completed the compensation planning. It was a compliance task that they were responsible for. Today, they're responsible for are managers making investment decisions that are attuned with our business strategy and our talent strategy? And it's a fundamental shift in the nature of the role of the compensation professional. So that robustness around governance and operational excellence needs to be embedded and taken into account this work redesign that's occurring. And then finally, of course, privacy as the fifth pillar to round this out. That's the example I would share that's so important and so critical to complete out the skills silver thread across the employee team.
And I guess it removes some of that subjectivity that can sometimes come into those pay and compensation conversations. And yeah, yes, the manager would always get help from the comp and bens department, but here's some data to kind of back that up. So maybe the manager is making less of these decisions on their own, which can lead to problems because what you said, some of the bias angles and that might come into that discussion.
Absolutely. And if you think of the manager, right, and their persona, think about a company which operates across hundreds of countries, across multiple lines of business, with all kinds of skills across the globe. You're a manager of 5 or 10 employees. And you see in your silo certain talent dynamics that are playing out. But how do we equip you with insights of the tens of thousands of managers across the enterprise, their skills, those talent dynamics, and share that information back with you so that you can better understand the talent dynamics as they connect and the patterns as they connect so you can make more informed decisions. So this is really about empowering the manager to make more fact-based objective decisions.
When we come back in just a moment, Anshul shares his views on HR's role in digital transformation. This series of the Digital HR Leaders podcast is sponsored by Hula. Hula Hub is a personalized digital workplace solution designed to boost productivity, save you time, increase employee engagement, and help enable a more connected culture, no matter where your people are. After decades of uninspiring workforce platforms, Hula Hub is the go-to platform for leaders wanting to meet the needs of their employees, boost their well-being, enable more flexible styles of working, and forever improve the way we work. It's a revolutionary way to connect everything we use on a daily basis and access it all with just two clicks, keeping you organized and saving millions of pounds in wasted time. To learn more, visit hula.io. That's hulera.io. Welcome back to this episode of the Digital HR Leaders podcast with Anshul Shiapuri, Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at IBM Workforce. Now, back to the conversation.
Let's move from pay to reimagining work. So you've written a lot, quite a lot about this year, and I'm glad that you're sharing some of your work publicly, Anshul. I know we talked about that a couple of years ago when I was still at IBM. You share quite a bit on your own AI-powered HR journey at IBM, including automation across employee experiences to simplify work. So you said in one article, and we'll kind of reference to this article with the material around the podcast, the first lesson of automation was to reimagine work before we automate. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, and why was imagining work so important, and what were the main areas of work that you discovered were ripe for reimagining?
Yeah, absolutely, David. And at the outset, I'll say it's not a new thought, and it's probably not even my thought, right? If we were not reimagining work and focusing on the user need, we would probably be having horse-drawn carriages led by the strongest horses, fed with the best protein-heavy diet, because they would push the horse cart the fastest, right? We wouldn't have evolved to the nature of transportation we are at today. And it's all about the user need and the business need and solving for the intersection of that. In the example I just gave you, the user need was all about how do I help move my goods from point A to point B? Yeah. That was the need, not to move the horse-drawn carriage at the fastest rate possible. And the business need in that example was all about optimizing your supply chain to make a business most profitable.
Yeah.
That as context in it, as an example, because that's what, as I think about how we evolve and transform in HR, that becomes the nature of how we think about it. In our case, as we embed skills across the employee journey, and that's the implication of our business transformation that we're going through with digitization, we really need to rethink what we are expecting the manager to do, the nature of the manager's work, and how that is changing. And that has evolved from, let me do compliance work and make sure you have, I have documented your annual performance reviews, to a talent magnet who is responsible for retaining critical skills in the team and helping develop and deliver a thriving organization. And if that's what we expect them to do, we need to equip them with the right insights. We need to help them understand and internalize the business strategy and the talent strategy. And this is an important nuance, David. This is not about just sharing the talent strategy. Skills is a silver thread. But it's about something that needs to be internalized. And in order to do that, they need to be able to have conversations around what does that mean? What is the skill? How do I understand what a skill is? Why is a skill critical? Why is a skill not critical?
Yep.
They need to be able to have this conversation. And so today, they have access to the bot embedded in the compensation planning tool where they can ask these questions and get answers to those questions. So it's about creating an end-to-end experience for the manager that enables more effective decision making, as well as gives them that opportunity to have that conversation. And when, you know, the bot cannot answer questions for them, their ability to ask questions of somebody face to face. And that also means the way the work of the compensation profession or the learning profession or other professionals need to change. They need to have now more analytical skills, because if they are to be able to look at our investments going in the right places, they need to have new design skills if they need to be able to think about the manager's user needs. So it's about changing the nature of work in both for the manager and the IBMer, as well as our own HR teams, and implications of that for skills. That's what I would say is how work is changing and how we're thinking.
And of course, those techniques are going to stand you and IBM in good stead when it comes to reimagining work from a hybrid perspective. Although I know, again, from my time at IBM, IBM was one of the pioneers of remote working anyway. But obviously the new hybrid environment, whatever that means, is you know, data and technology is going to be helping to empower that, but also empower teams and managers as well.
Absolutely. If there's one thing that has really become clear in the last 18 months during the pandemic, it's that digitization is getting accelerated. That is undoubtedly what's occurring. And that means much greater emphasis around technology, data, and AI in decision making as we go through this journey.
Yeah, that's possibly a part two of the podcast around that. So, you know, what is the most important thing that you believe that for organizations and then people analytics teams as well to get right foundationally to ensure the ethical deployment of AI across employee experiences or across the workforce?
I'll give you a two-part answer to that, David. One is something I've already said, which is don't think of this as something that occurs at the back end of an AI being developed. It's something that you need to do upfront as part of the design.
Yeah.
Then more importantly, and perhaps connected to this, is making sure that it's solving for the right business problem and the right user problem.
Yeah.
That's what I would say is that when I see AI projects failing, it's because they're not operating at the intersection of what is the business problem that you're trying to solve and the right user problem you're trying to solve. It's rarely because you don't have the right data or the data quality is poor. Those are all important ingredients, but it's mostly because you're not starting with the right business problem and user problem.
And I guess what you mean by that is, number one, is there an important business problem that needs to be solved? And then number two, we're designing it for users. Will users use it? Is the user interface strong enough? You know, how can we compel users to use, how can we encourage users to use it by making it friendly and giving them information? It's those sort of considerations, isn't it? So you could have a really important business problem, but you could sign a piece of AI that no one wants to use.
That's exactly right. Maybe there's an important business problem, but there's no user, or the user is focused on other problems.
Yeah.
Well, this is not important enough for them to embark on this journey with you on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I mean, I've been saying, I'm sure you've been saying it for a long time, you know, never start with the data. Start with a business problem, but if you're going to build something, make sure that users want to use it, and then and it solves for the business problem. And you can't, well, you can still go wrong, of course, but get those two building blocks in place and you're setting yourself up nicely for success.
I think that's really well said.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. If you're looking to continue your learning journey, head over to myhrfuture.com and take a look at the My HR Future Academy. It's a learning experience platform supporting HR professionals to become more data-driven, more business-focused, and more experience-led. By taking our short assessment, you'll see how you stack up against the HR skills of the future. Then, our recommended learning journeys guide you every step of the way, helping you to close your skills gaps, deepen your knowledge, and press play on your career. Now let's go back to the conversation with Anshul as we discuss developing a data-driven culture in HR at IBM.
let's move because obviously creating all these products and getting users potentially involved in building those and testing those as well and iterating, and you know, this is a different way of working for HR, let's be honest about it. So let's talk a bit about developing a data-driven culture. You know, we recently published a new model of data-driven culture for HR, and it was made up of three components, one of which is embedding data-driven decision-making. You know, how do you approach this at IBM across the HR community? You could probably answer it from both, but particularly, how do you get the HR communities buy into actually taking a more data-driven decision-making approach, i.e. so I guess when HR are interfacing directly with the business, how do they take some of this information and work with the business to make it happen? And again, if you're going direct to managers, I guess is probably the second element of that.
The most important thing, I think, from my perspective, is actually not the tools or the platform or your web page, which however swanky it might look.
Yeah.
It's about the culture in the organization. And do you have a data-driven culture in your organization? And it's beyond HR, it's really at the company level.
Yeah.
And perhaps the one smallest but most powerful tactic that I've seen to propel that culture a bit forward is celebrating individuals who are embodying what you want to be amplified across the organization. So we try and celebrate individuals who are exhibiting this data-driven culture in all hands calls of our CHRO and in other fora to really point people towards the North Star, so there is clarity around what the North Star is. So that's what I would say is the number one thing. But of course, you can't just say something and do something else. So it's about channeling your investments behind that. So whether it's consumable tools, BI tools. Today at IBM, if you're a frontline HR partner and you want access to some of these information, whether it's salary or salary ranges, or time in band, you know, how long they've been in a certain role, they can actually go to the bot and ask that question. So it's also about consumable experiences to the HR practitioner, so that they can, while we're telling them what the North Star is, that we're equipping them with tools that get going on that North Star journey. And then the final thing I would say is declaring what skills are strategic for the organization. So in IBM, we've declared for the HR practitioner, analytics is one of the key strategic skills we expect all of you to have. So it's not just some of us, it's not just the analytics organization or you know, 20, 30 people in the talent organization. It's everybody's expected to have these core analytics skills. And we also actually do boot camps, so people can come in, you know, get, if they're a bit edgy about trying out some tools, they can get their hands dirty live and have some experts to talk to.
And I think that kind of approach of, I suppose there's a little bit of top down there, you know, coming, I know it came from Diane, I presume it's coming from Nicole as well, you know, that as you said, analytics is a key skill that you need as an HR professional within IBM. And if you want to develop a career in HR, in IBM, then you need to, you know, if you haven't got this skill, then you need to acquire a skill. We will give you the means in which to do that through boot camps. We will celebrate your success, and we will identify people, I guess, who are embodying this. So, you know, then there's an opportunity, I guess, to learn off them. And we will give you the tools, intuitive tools, so you can actually use it. So it's not just one of those. You have to do all of those together to really create that data-driven culture, I guess.
You have to. It has to be clear from the very top. That's important and strategic, and you need to embody that in all workflows, whether it's the tools, your, you know, Slack channels or other collaboration vehicles you're on. So everybody sees people practicing that day to day.
And again, then from what you said on the previous question, connecting all of that to business problems that need to be solved, rather than just analysts going off into a dark room and coming up with solutions for problems that don't really exist.
That's right.
And that, I guess that really supports the work of your team, because, you know, if on the one end you're orienting them on the most important business challenges that the organization is facing, and, you know, you're building stuff that's putting the user at the center, so i.e. it will be used, and then you'll deliver the value from that as well. And at the same time, there's this whole ethic around creating that data-driven culture, as you said, which transcends HR. It's not just HR, but certainly if we think about HR as well, then you're creating a very powerful vehicle, really, to really keep perpetuating this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And David, the other thing that I would say to your listeners is, you know, different companies are at different points in a data transformation journeys, and that's okay. That's okay. You don't have, nobody's perfect, but also try and see if you can leverage the broader ecosystem. So at IBM, we've stood up an enterprise data platform that tries to connect our people data, our financial data, our client data, and our product data. And this is an important triangulation to have, because you're not solving for a talent problem in isolation. You're solving for it in the context of a business problem, in the context of your client needs, and that's where your people come in. And so having this integrated foundation ensures consistency, but also consumability, because you don't get to consumability unless you have a systematic approach to a data platform. And that's something we call Workforce 360. We're very proud of the progress we've made in that space in the last couple of years, David, since you were at IBM. It helps us really have a scalable approach to trustworthy AI, because that's been sort of the key accelerator for us to enable a scalable portion of trustworthy AI.
You've set that up very nicely, Shianshul. I was going to ask you about Workforce 360. So you probably, you know, love to talk about it in a little bit more detail. You know, in terms of quantifying the business value of productizing analytic solutions in this way, and you might have a couple of examples of how Workforce 360 has really helped accelerate a sort of value in that sense. I'd love to hear a bit more.
Absolutely, David. And, you know, I already talked about a few examples, whether it's pay or the learning and career, and all of them have quantifiable business value for those particular experiences. But what's important for us also, as I shared with you, is a secure, scalable data platform. And the reality is, and many organizations are at the same place, our data systems and architecture was never designed for insights. It was never designed for personalized experiences. It was designed for compliance. It was designed able to answer how many people are in a certain country in a manner that could be certified and, you know, check the box off. And so we have, you know, data systems like many other organizations, that some are in legacy spaces, some are on the cloud, and having a hybrid cloud platform that enables you to connect across these pieces is what our Workforce 360 platform gives us. And if you think about the two most important outcomes of this. One is speed. Our ability to move at speed was hampered when things were sitting in different places. And think about your own experiences sometimes, whether it's dealing with any data that you might have. You're pulling data from some spreadsheet, trying to merge it with some other spreadsheet, and there's a data quality issue, and the amount of churn that can cause in your day-to-day. And alleviating that, taking that out, and driving the right quality siloed, cross-silo decisions. That's what this data platform gives us. And in our experience, for every dollar that we've invested in this, it gives us $10 in return over the past 8 years. It's that critical foundation. It has a lot of indirect benefits, because it's a critical foundation that really makes the lives of many, many people much better.
And as you said, by bringing people and talent data together with customer data, with sales data, you're actually going to answer the big challenges facing the organization you want access to all of those data sources and more, finance data and other types of data. And actually by having that together, as you said, the speed in which you can then investigate and analyze that particular challenge and you know, come up with a solution and a product to kind of answer that is significant.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the other thing I would say is, this is not just about helping HR, this is helps our sales professionals because they can access the right people data for the right decision. It helps the finance professionals. And that might be a bit scary for some people, right? People data has to be in our walled garden. Yes, but for the right use case, for the right business problem, the right users should be able to access it for decision-making across the board. So it is a two-way street and sort of a culture shift that we all need to go through.
Well, we're coming to the last couple of questions, Anshul. The first one, you know, I think you've certainly covered, so you might want to summarize, but this is the question that we're asking everyone on this particular series of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. How can HR help the business identify the critical skills for the future?
Absolutely, David. This is one of my favorite questions, so thank you for asking that. I already shared a bit about how skills is sort of the biggest inflection point over the past decade and how that's helping us all re-architect our employee journeys. But I would say the way in which we can help the business identify critical skills has two angles. One is demand and the other is supply. And when you look at the demand perspective, the data is there in certain roles, whether it's financial pipeline or voluntary attrition of key skills, because that's what leads to those are areas where you will see the in the marketplace where you have attrition, that's where a lot of demand is also coming up. So those are all examples of demand markers for the business. When you talk about supply markers, supply in your organization comes from a number of different markers. It could be things like voluntary attrition, because when your supply is beginning to deteriorate, or offer reject ratios. If you're making offers and in some roles you have higher rejection rates than others, that's a risk to your supply. Time to fill a role, that's a risk to your supply. The number of open jobs in the market for a certain role, that's a marker of supply. So there are, so I would say both these angles together, the demand for a certain skill and the supply of a certain skill, and the data points, as I said, are there to help infer where the demand is and the supply is. Both these things together then give you a more nuanced picture of how the organization should head going forward.
And I guess from what you were saying there, that involves the data that you've got within the organization, but also quite a lot of data that's not in the organization, so the labor market data, basically, that you're using and blending together to give that clear picture.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's about the internal and the external view and bringing those together for the business need.
Okay, so before I give you the last question, you know, where's going back to the data-driven decision-making, where would you say is the number one place to start when trying to embed that data-driven decision-making across the HR community?
If it's about data-driven decision-making for the community, I would still start with the same problem. If you're a client partner who's being asked a question to go solve, validate there's a problem to be solved. What is the business problem? And let me give an example. There was once one of my colleagues at another company came and asked me, somebody is asking me to solve an attrition problem because they're saying it's at 15% attrition in a certain job role. And you know, the person felt strongly that it would lead to a lot of churn. And so I said, one of the things that you might want to ask or look at is what is the attrition in the market for those skills? And it turned out it was actually a higher level of attrition in the market. So the problem, while the individual in the business was facing it and feeling it, wasn't really as big a problem as they thought it was to begin with. So there are ways in which we can validate that the problem is worth solving and the addressable opportunity.
Perfect. It's a great example, particularly for this time when we're hearing all this stuff about the great resignation at the moment. So I think sometimes the headlines are worse than the actual reality, aren't they? So Anshul, thank you very much for being a guest on the Digital HR Leaders podcast. Can you let listeners know how they can stay in touch with you, follow you on social media, and find out more about your work?
Absolutely. Firstly, David, thank you for the opportunity. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I'm always available on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to reach out to me. And of course, if you want to have a chat more, you can reach out to me by email as well.
Brilliant, Anshul. It's been fantastic to have you on the show. Loved hearing about the great work that you're doing. And certainly those five steps that you outlined, I think are definitely something I'd recommend that everyone follows. So thank you for sharing that with listeners.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy listening, please do rate the show on your podcast app and share it with your friends and colleagues via social media. We rely on your feedback and support to keep being able to make the podcast. For more from us at Insight 222, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and our weekly newsletter at myhrfuture.com. Tune in next week for a special bonus episode of the podcast and the final episode of 2021. I'll be joined by Neris Mutler, evangelist in the Chief Innovation Office at ServiceNow, to talk about the future of employee experience. Until then, stay safe, stay well, and take care.